The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace.
Enroll Alabama is a project of AIDS Alabama. For more information, visit the website AIDSAlabama.org. Welcome to another episode of the Healthy Alabama podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama. I'm David Person, and it is good to have with me in the studio today someone I've known all of my life, all the way back to growing up in on the south side of Chicago, and that is Dr. Lilith Graham White. Lilith, welcome to the Healthy Alabama podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here with my brother from another mother.
That's right. That's right. Our families go back years and years. So the reason that you're here is not because you're a longtime friend and a sister to me, but the reason is a couple of reasons. One, you are an OB-GYN, as many of us call it. Your specialty is obstetrics. There we go. Right. I guess I can say it now. Obstetrics and gynecology. And so you do a lot with women's health and their well-being. So we want to talk a little bit about that. But then we also want to talk about your personal story. You've got a very moving, profound, and I think it's fair to say complicated personal story.
Yes, absolutely.
And we want to talk about that in the context of the health and well-being of women in particular.
Yeah.
So let's start, first of all, by just laying the foundation. So you've been in practice as an OB-GYN for how many years?
Well, I am 52, so since I was 25 or so, probably over 20 years,
okay.
Over 23 years or so.
Okay, over 20 years. And you practiced first in Atlanta, right?
No, I practiced first in D.C.,
oh, in
Maryland,
D.C. Okay.
Where I did my residency.
Okay.
And when I got married, I relocated to Atlanta, Georgia, where I practiced for the bulk of my practice.
Right. And now you're practicing here in North Alabama.
Right.
So in the course of your practice as an OB-GYN, what concerns have you developed about some of the challenges that women face when it comes to their health and well-being?
Now, that'll go into my story at some point, but I'll start off by saying just the way I chose obstetrics and gynecology had to do with, first of all, loving surgery and then loving female health, the health and wellness. I particularly chose the specialty because I felt I could empathize with women, you know, being a woman. And I also just have always had a humanitarian kind of approach, even in the clinical aspect of things, where I wanted to kind of help women. But it wasn't until this personal story of mine where I really kind of delve into things.
Okay. Before we get to your story, though, I want to talk a little bit more about just, in your expert opinion, what do you think some of the biggest challenges are that women face when it comes to their personal health and well-being?
Because I look at health as a multifaceted kind of component, it's not just physical health, it's mental, emotional, and spiritual. I think some of the challenges are there may be some apprehension or hesitancy to get into their more emotional state. A lot of times women have situations where they're in abusive situations, or their past history, their childhood upbringing, or maybe incidents of molestation and incest, which we really don't realize is very prevalent, impacts their health. For instance, we've seen, and it's well documented in the literature, that chronic pelvic pain can be a component of someone not being able to surface some physical abuse or things that they've done in the past that they're probably ashamed of now, just feel shameful about, that they weren't able to surface. We do have the Me Too movement, so people are getting a little more courage to do that. But those are things that I find challenging, because sometimes you'll find that you've done every diagnostic imaging study and someone still has chronic pelvic pain for no apparent reason. So in other words, they need counseling too. And that's a component in my practice. I just realized that I'm not just focusing on physical health, but mental, spiritual, and emotional health.
Mm. I think that is a key revelation. The idea that unresolved issues from in a woman's past, right, whether it's due to, you know, her being victimized by someone, or whether it's due to choices she's made, can lead to chronic pain, specifically in the pelvic area, not anywhere else, you're saying, but in the pelvic region.
More so there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, back in the day, they used to refer to it as psychosomatic. So, you know, it was well known, but it's just kind of taken a back seat now when it needs to be brought back to the forefront.
Mm. And that makes me really think, as you said, about the prevalence of abuse, you know, in its varied forms. I mean, you know, not just sexual abuse, but physical abuse, emotional abuse,
Verbal.
Verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. There are many, many women who are subjected to these things starting as children.
Yes. Right.
And going all the way into adulthood.
Right.
In fact, I'll tell you, I had one of my physician friends told me a very chilling story once about one of his patients. He said that when she came to see him, her husband was waiting outside in the car. The husband didn't even come into the practice, just sat out in the car. And so when she was in there, he was examining her, and he detected something. He wasn't quite sure what was going on, but he could tell something wasn't quite right with her. And so he engaged her in conversation, began to probe a little bit, Lilith. And he said that what he discovered was that on the way to the practice, on the way to his practice for her appointment, the woman had been pushed out of the car by the husband.
Oh.
The husband was, and I don't remember now what triggered this, this incident of physical abuse, but on the way to the practice. So, you know, and she was afraid, of course, mm-hmm. to talk about it. She was an older woman. So I think he said she was in her 60s or maybe even older than that. And you know, he was offering to her, you know, some support. Look, you know, we can get the police involved or do whatever we need to do. And she declined all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so because she declined it, he couldn't do anything for her. And he was sharing the story with me without revealing, obviously, her identity or her husband's identity or even the time frame. But he was saying all of that to say that he was left as a physician feeling helpless and really wondering, what is she going back into?
Right.
You know, here's a man who wouldn't even come into, you know, inside. So, you know, there's a real, all this, the whole scenario was just rife with, you know, control and abuse issues.
Yes.
And at her age, if she was still dealing with that, you would assume she's probably dealt with it for years, wouldn't you?
Right. Well, maybe a couple of things I want to say about that. When you reference, and I know you didn't mean anything about it, but you said what triggered it. A lot of times women have a problem feeling that they did something to cause these kind of actions. And I just want to say today publicly that usually it has nothing to do with the woman.
Absolutely.
It's just that there's a disconnect. There's some anger management issues, some dysfunction that needs to be addressed with counseling.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the woman should not victimize herself that way or blaming herself.
And let me be clear. That's not, yeah.
I know you didn't mean that. No,
that.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that because I knew you didn't mean that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And another thing that's odd is you said the partner sat out in the car. What we normally see is the partner will come in because it's a control issue. And I'll ask the woman, well, did you want to do this with just the two of us? Because, you know, I know that maybe we can engage in more authentic communication without him around. So they normally do not stay away. They stay right by her side to make sure that that threat is there, that you will not open your mouth about anything. And it's interesting that when I was training, I actually see the Lord's orchestration in some of the things that I was able to get trained in that are not part of most OBGYN programs. But it was given to us as an option when I was in Maryland, where we could get into domestic violence issues, know how to recognize them, and et cetera. And I did take some courses in that. So I'm familiar with the control issue. I'm also familiar with, when you said the woman didn't want to do anything, a lot of times they're powerless because they're resourceless. They don't have resources.
Right, right.
So there's nowhere to go. You know, so if they speak, they have to have an exit plan. And a lot of times, because they're not the sole provider, and sometimes they're unemployed, they really don't have an exit plan.
Now, there is, in North Alabama, and I think in most communities, there are organizations that can help a woman create an exit plan. Here in North Alabama, the organization is called Crisis Services of North Alabama. That's one of them. Another organization is Ashakiran. That's another organization that can help. And Ashakiran specializes specifically in helping women who are foreign nationals who may have language or cultural challenges on top of whatever's going on in the home.
Yeah.
And so both of these organizations are available to help women in North Alabama. And I think Ashakiran actually works with women in other parts of the state as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you Google that, Ashakiran is A-S-H-A and then Kiran, a separate word, K-I-R-A-N. You can Google that, get their contact information, no matter where you are in the state of Alabama. Crisis Services of North Alabama, if you call 211 here in North Alabama, you can reach them.
That's great information, David, and I actually want to get into that more, too, with my mission that I have envisioned doing with, in addition to my gynecologic practice. But I want to throw a plug in here too for the men that might be listening. I understand that the roles can be reversed, and I know there are men that are victims to female abuse. And it may not always be physical. It could be emotional, verbal, mental, et cetera. So this interview with us is not one-sided. We understand that, you know, this is just any victimized individual with these situations. We also want to let the predators know out there, this is not a bashing session either against you. We really would pray that you would get some help. But I wanted to mention about the organizations, and without probably jumping ahead and going into my story, just being a victim myself, and no, I wasn't in a very physically abusive setting, so to speak. I was just had a one-time situation occur. But anyway, when I had to go out and look for resources, they are there. But once again, the under-resourced victim has several challenges. One, getting out of the supervision of the controlled predator to go and seek the resources.
Mm-hmm.
Also having transportation to do it, and the time to do it. And what we haven't solved or resolved as of yet, even with these different, you know, organizations, I'm not sure what the turnaround time is. You know, you go there, you fill out information, I guess you get screened to see if, you know, you're eligible for some of the resources, but it doesn't happen just there. And they take you and say, come on, we have a room up here for you to board in. And what you don't realize is once they reach out and get help, if they're being followed, as the case sometimes, you know, occurs that way, they can get stalked, they can get followed. You know, I've been in these situations. And then if that is discovered by the predator, the person that's in control, they can get punished. So it's difficult. It's really going to take a lot. Like, it's just not trying to seek ways to resolve issues for the victim, but we also have to seek ways to help the predator.
I think that's a great point. We need to do a lot more with our men and our boys to engage them on just the proper ways to deal with women, and also with women who may have violent tendencies or anger issues in terms of how they deal with men. And there are people also, I don't want to leave out our LGBTQ community. There are people in that community who, you know, they're in same-sex relationships and they're experiencing domestic abuse, mm-hmm. intimate partner violence, as we call it.
Yeah, victim of any kind.
That's right. A mm-hmm. victim of any kind, it's a problem. Our friend, our mutual friend, Hallbrook Polite, has a counseling business in which yes. he deals specifically with men who have been, usually it's men, who have been diverted by the system to his cores. And he tries to help them address their anger issues and help them to recalibrate themselves as mm-hmm. fathers and husbands and lovers. And he's been on the podcast and we've yeah. talked about these things. I think this is a good time, actually, Lilith, to get into your story.
Okay.
It's a powerful story that has some dark moments, but it's also very inspiring. Just start wherever you feel comfortable.
Okay. Well, first I want to say I am just excited to be here to even tell the story, if it could just help one person, because I realize that people are empowered and inspired by the stories of other people that have made it through. I did mention to you that I am an obstetrician and gynecologist that actually help women in these situations. But I just wanted to say, with the mask taken off and the facade and everything, that I'm a human being just like everybody else. And I think as professionals, we're not transparent enough when we're in our clinical settings, realizing that that can be powerful and impacting to our clients at times when they just need to know if they can make it over and get through. But so like I told you, that was my professional side. My personal side is I'm a mommy of four. I have two sons and two daughters. The two sons were godsend. They're the oldest. When I married my husband, married their dad, we're now divorced. But we had a situation in 2012 where, from the substances and everything that were going on in his life in terms of alcohol, tobacco, et cetera, there was just an inundated situation where, in his inebriated state, he tried to choke me. And it was a death grip that could have killed me. Because we had never had that situation occur before, when I saw him assailing me, I thought it was a joke. But as he got closer and I saw his eyes, it was horrifying. And I realized then, let me start screaming. I started screaming, but, you know, after just a couple of screams, I was feeling a tight grasp around my neck, like I was having my life choked out. In that moment, just being a person that's religious, and going to a religious schools all my life, I've heard by the late evangelist E.E. Cleveland, for those who know who he is, he was saying if we were ever assailed by any kind of demonic influences or demonic forces, that, you know, just simply calling on the name of Jesus could relieve everything. I tried to do that, but at the time, with me being choked, that was not something that I could do. So inwardly, I just cried out to the Lord and, you know, just pretty much saying, help me. And I just really thought, this is probably not going to work, because, you know, I may have done it too late. And I just started closing my eyes, as you see on television when somebody feels they're about to die, they just close their eyes and feel like this is a peaceful time to check out. But while I was doing that, I saw my daughter, the oldest one, on the side, and she was just, I saw the grimace on her face and her fists clenching, and it looked like she was trying to help, but was kind of timid all at the same time and fearful, you know, to even try to do anything to come to my rescue. But when this happened, I prayed, and instantly, and I know you all that have been in situations, there's some people that are listening to me right now that have been in some miraculous situations. you know what I'm talking about. It was like instantly I didn't feel anything. And I almost thought, okay, this feels very surreal. So I opened my eyes and I looked, and he's still right there looking deranged. And this time, instead of one hand choking me, it was like two hands choking me, but I didn't feel a thing. So while I'm still there trying to grasp it all, it was like the Holy Spirit told me, grab the landline. I grabbed the landline, called 911, and as I'm telling 911, hey, I'm here, I need help, my husband's trying to kill me, he comes to himself and tries to knock the phone out of my hand.
Okay, I just want to interrupt for a second, because that's a very interesting point. You were able to talk with his hands around your throat.
That's how miraculous it was. So anyway, as I opened my eyes and I saw the two hands, and then later on, too, we witnessed when we got out of the situation and, you know, got him apprehended and everything, we saw scratches down my back, which let me know he was trying to encircle as if my neck got bigger, which I just interpreted the Holy Spirit or Jesus himself had put his hands around my neck to protect it. And I couldn't feel it anymore. And it only made sense because now the width had to get wider because he was using more than one hand. He was using two. And later on, I saw scratches down my back, like, you know, he was trying to grasp things, you know, just trying to get his hands to encircle. But, and, you know, that just will speak more to a Christian who understands the miraculous power of Jesus. And if you've never felt it in your life, I just solicit that you get a closer walk with him and ask to see him up front and personal, because I did see him up front and personal that day. But, you know, this sounds like the end of the story, and that was horrific and tragic enough because, yes, it did sever the family bond. We had to get him arrested. We sought a new residence. We had to get a temporary protective order. My boys at the time were living with their biological mother, who had moved out of the state. So, you know, we were no longer with them just at that moment. So it was just the girls. But little did we know this was going to just open Pandora's box, so to speak. What we went through was so horrific. It was like I could have lost my mind if I was not solidly planted on the solid rock, which is Jesus Christ for us. So I understand how he upheld me through this whole storm. I call it a five-tier storm because it had to do with strongholds in my marriage, my family, my church, the justice system. You know, all of those seemed to fail me. And, you know, in spite of it all, I was at peace. I was in my right mind. I was able to make intelligent decisions with, you know, God's help and through prayer and get me and my daughters into safety, continue to practice until the Lord said, shut the door and take time off, a hiatus, to see that your girls are mentally, spiritually, and physically okay, and do homeschool for them right now. They were 10 and 7 at the time it happened. And, you know, it was traumatizing for them to now have our new norm of just 3. We had a family of 6, and we dwindled down to 3. But we adjusted to our new norm. And we actually experienced homelessness during the transition. We experienced, and that wasn't initially. Initially, we just moved out. But I must say we could not go to a safe residence until we decided, first of all, what we were going to do with our dog, because most of the residents didn't take his breed. It was an American Bulldog, or she, I'm sorry. And her weight, she was 125. So it was hard to find a place that took that heavyweight dog with the breed that she was. So we stayed in hotels initially and put her in a vet. We were being stalked in the hotels. The way we found that out is the concierge told us there was a gentleman that presented a picture with our names and said, have you seen these individuals? And
was this your ex-husband?
Well, I don't know. I'm assuming it was, or probably somebody he used to come and ask and inquire.
Okay.
We never saw the person if she didn't have a picture.
Okay.
But the person came and inquired, have you seen these individuals? You know, my wife has kidnapped the kids, and that was all untrue. But later on, when we were able to get the temporary protective order, things got better, and, you know, we were able to present that. I know when I rewind back, he was arrested after the attempted, you know, strangling incident, But he got out the very next day. He got out on a misdemeanor because the profile he had in court, where his foul actually, was mysteriously gone. But at the time when I did some investigating into defects, you know, Department of Family and Children's Services, they did have the foul, but it wasn't there when the court was making the decision whether to put him on probation or, you know, lock him up. So he got a misdemeanor with the mandate to do 6 months of anger management courses. Later on, we found the foul.
You know, I think this is a good point to say we will end this episode of the podcast here. And then we're going to, in the next episode, we're going to continue your story, getting to the more inspirational
part, right?
You know, part, because you clearly, as you said earlier before we even started recording, you said that there are people, when they hear your story, who say, you don't look like what you've been through.
Right,
and,
absolutely.
And I'm thinking,
this hasn't even
now.
Touched the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
Nothing, yeah.
But I'm looking at you now, and, you know, you're the same, you know, young woman. You said you're 52. I'm thinking 52 going on 32.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you really. I mean,
I have no
you,
money for you.
Yeah.
No.
But I mean, seriously, you have really not changed even through the years. You know, a lot of this kind of stress will change people physically. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you look the same. You look
Isaiah
the same
26,
as you always
3.
Have.
Okay. Keep your mind and heart on him, and he'll keep you in perfect peace.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
So we're gonna wrap up today's episode, but we're going to come back in the next episode. We're going to continue the story of Dr. Laleith Graham White, and we're going to get to the powerful, climactic, inspiring, I say ending, but I guess it's really sort of ongoing.
It's still ongoing,
isn't it? Yeah. So we'll do that. The Healthy Alabama Podcast is produced in partnership with WJOU 90.1 FM here in Huntsville, Alabama. And we are sponsored by Enroll Alabama, which is a project of AIDS Alabama. Our theme music was produced by DJ Bailey, and I'm David Person, host and producer. Until next time, be healthy.